Yes. Testing.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
سماحة الشيخ أسامة عبد الغاني. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. On behalf of the ICA, I'd like to welcome you all to the Islamic Center of America and thank you all for joining us. We're going to get started with the recitation of the Holy Quran by Brother Ali Abbas and the translation by Sister Maryam Asghar. Ba'd salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. تبارك الذي بيده الملك وهو على كل شيء قدير. الذي خلق الموت والحياة ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا وهو العزيز الغفور. الذي خلق سبع سماوات طباقا ما ترى في خلق الرحمن من تفاوت فارجع البصر هل ترى من فطور. ثم ارجع البصر كرتين ينقلب إليك البصر خاسئا وهو حسير. ولقد زينا السماء الدنيا بمصابيح وجعلناها رجوما للشياطين وأعتدنا لهم عذاب السعير. وللذين كفروا بربهم عذاب جهنم وبئس المصير. إذا ألقوا فيها سمعوا لها شهيقا وهي تفور. تكاد تميز من الغيظ. كلما ألقي فيها فوج سالهم خزنتها ألم يأتكم نذير. قالوا بلى قد جاء وقلنا ما نزل الله من شيء إن أنتم إلا في ضلال كبير. وقالوا لو كنا نسمع أو نعقل ما كنا في أصحاب السعير. فاعترفوا بذنبهم فسحقا لأصحاب السعير. إن الذين يخشون ربهم بالغيب لهم مغفرة وأجر كبير. وأسروا قولكم أو اجهروا به إنه عليم بذات الصدور. ألا يعلم من خلق وهو اللطيف الخبير. هو الذي جعل لكم الأرض وامشوا في مناكبها وكلوا من رزقه وإليه النشور أأمنتم من في السماء أن يقصف بكم الأرض فإذا هي تمور أم أمنتم من في السماء أن يرسل عليكم حاصبا فستعلمون كيف نذير ولقد كذب الذين من قبلهم فكيف كان نكير أولم يروا إلى الطير فوقهم صافات ويقبض ما يمسكهن إلا الرحمن إنه بكل شيء بصير صدق الله العلي العظيم صلوا على محمد وآل محمد
In the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. Blessed is he in whose hands is all sovereignty, and he has power over all things. He who has created death and life, that he may test you to see which of you is best in conduct. And he is the Almighty, the All-Forgiving. He created seven heavens in layers. You do not see any discordance in the creation of the All-Beneficent. Look again, do you see any flaw? Look again once more. Your look will return to you humbled and weary. Certainly we have adorned the lowest heaven with lamps and made them missiles against the devils, and we have prepared for them punishment of the blaze. For those who defy their Lord, is the punishment of hell.
Is there a way of doing it?
And it is an evil destination. When they are thrown at it, they hear it blaring as it seethes, almost exploding with rage. Whenever a group is thrown in it, its keepers will ask them, "Did there not come to you any warner?" They will say, "Yes, a warner did come to us, but we impugned him and said, Allah did not send down anything, and you are only in great error." And they will say, "Had we listened or applied reason, we would not have been among the inmates of the blaze." Thus they will admit their sin. So away with the inmates of the blaze. Indeed, for those who fear their Lord in secret, there will be forgiveness and a great reward. Speak secretly or do so loudly. Indeed, he knows well what is in the chests. Would he who has created not know? And he is the all-attentive, the all-aware. It is he who has made the earth tractable for you. So walk on its flanks and eat of his provisions. And towards him is the resurrection. Are you secure that he who is in the sky will not make the earth swallow you while it quakes? Are you secure that he who is in the sky will not unleash upon you a rain of stones? Soon you will know how my warning has been. Certainly those who were before them had denied, but then how was my rebuttal? Have they not regarded the birds above them, spreading and closing their wings? No one sustains them except the All-Beneficent. Indeed, he sees best all things. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother and sister, for the beautiful recitations. If you all can shift to the middle, if there's any empty seats between you, just so whoever is coming in late can sit to the sides, if at all possible. Before we get started with our program for tonight, I just want to make a quick announcement. The Islamic Center of America Youth Group has started their Friday evening program. So every Friday evening at 7 p.m., inshallah, we will be having programs. And if you want any information as to what the program entails, such as speaker or topic, then please like the Islamic Center of America Facebook page, where the flyer will be put up. So next week we're having our very first brotherhood and sisterhood event. So the brothers will be having a workshop and playing a game of basketball after, and the women will be having an ice cream social in celebration of Sayyida Fatima Zahra alayhi salam. So we'd love for you all to join us next Friday at 7 p.m. Now, it is my great honor and privilege to introduce to you our speaker of the night. He is someone that we are so happy to have to be part of our community. So if you could please help me introduce Samahat Sheikh Usama Abdul Ghani, Ba'da Salawat Ala Muhammad Wa Ali Muhammad.
For the trouble.
It's on now. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. صلى على محمد. آل محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So dear brothers and sisters, it's a great honor to be here. It's a little different for me to be standing as opposed to sitting on the chair or on a minbar, but inshallah it'll work out. Today we're going to discuss the message to the youth. What will be our message to the youth? And inshallah, what we'll be leaning on are actually some of the works of Ayatollah Khamenei. May Allah bless him and protect him. Brothers and sisters, we're living in a very critical time. We're living in a time where we can change our future. We can either hasten the reappearance of the Imam, or God forbid, if we don't respond properly, then the situation that we're in right now can make life even more difficult for us. Now, I don't want anybody at all to ever feel afraid of the idea of Islamophobia. Inshallah, we're going to talk about how to use Islamophobia in such a way that it helps us to hasten the reappearance of the Imam. But we shouldn't think that any given situation that we're in, ever in life, when it's not our fault, when we look inward and we say that, is it that I am committing certain sins, that I've made certain strategic errors? At that time I will look inward, I make tawbah, I change my situation. But if a situation is imposed on me, if other people create a situation, that's not part of my free will, I'm in a situation that others have imposed on me, I should never hate that or be worried about that, thinking that that's going to ruin my future. I might hate it, as in I don't like it, I don't like dhulm, I don't like oppression, but to say that I'm upset when it comes to the dunya. Actually, being depressed is not Islamic. If somebody feels depressed about something that's out of their control, we actually have a hadith about this, that say whoever wakes up in the morning and is depressed, hazinan, ala dunya hazinan, whoever wakes up and they're depressed about this world, this person has woken up and in reality they're angry with God, with the decree of Allah. Because part of the world that you live in is not something you determine. Those are factors that Allah puts there to test you and I. So actually, we'll see, inshallah, this current situation will be one where we can benefit from. And the verse of Quran is Surah 4. I don't know if my voice is okay. We're good? Okay. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Sometimes as a speaker, it takes a little while to get used to a new place. You don't know if your voice is too loud. You see people moving around, stuff like that. So bear with me. The verse of Quran is Surah 4 and it's verse number 19. Allah talks to us about uncomfortable situations. Uncomfortable situations. Over here, God says, فَعَسَىٰ أَن تَكْرَهُ شَيْئًا وَيَجْعَلَ اللَّهُ فِيهِ خَيْرًا كَثِيرًا. Many times you might hate something. Hate a particular situation. But you know, when you look at your teachings of Islam, that my responsibility is to actually stay in this situation. Not to run away, not to leave. But I hate the situation. This situation is difficult. God says many times you might hate a situation, you might hate something, but actually God has put much good in it. God has put much good in it. So what we want to do, brothers and sisters, with this situation of Islamophobia is to actually embrace it and see how to flip it. Find out what our responsibility is, make sure that we stay and do our responsibility, but not to be so worried, so overwhelmed by the pressure that's on us, by the insults, by the vilification, by the demonization of Muslims, that we lose focus on what our current responsibility is. I remember hearing a story once. They said that this lady, it was time to go to church. It was Sunday. So she came into the room and she sees her son is sleeping. And it's Sunday and it's time to go to the church. So she tries to get him up and she says, look, you got to go to the church. It's Sunday. We got to leave. We got to do things. And he says, no, I don't want to go. I'm going to stay in bed today. He says that I'll give you two good reasons why I shouldn't go to church today. What are the two good reasons? She says, one, I don't like them. Two, they don't like me. She said, I'll give you two reasons why you should go to church. One of them is that you're 54 years old, and the second is that you're the pastor. So we don't want to be like that. What is my responsibility? How can I use this situation and do what my responsibility is? What we don't want to do, one thing that we want to keep in mind, is that we don't allow anyone to dictate our future for us. By the grace of Allah, inshallah, we'll cover the verses. With the help of Allah, we are the masters of our own destiny. We're not going to allow the media, the corporate America, or anybody else to dictate our future. We've got to make sure that we do our responsibility. And by the way, this discussion that we're trying to have, that message that we want to give to the youth, it's much more important than this being an election year even. It's more important than does Hillary come in or does Trump come in. The issue that we're trying to face, or that we're going to try and address, inshallah, is much bigger than that. It's true that it's an election year, and we even will talk a little bit about the election, but we never want to be people who are short-sighted. Short-sighted people will see the trees, but they don't see the forest. For us as believers, we always want to see what the game-changing solution is. We don't want to get bogged down in the details and get worried and get stressed and forget that we have a big picture and a solution that we're actually looking for. What we believe and what part of our message is to the whole world is that in order for the world to experience joy and happiness, the leadership of the world has to be in the hands of the righteous. The problem that the world is facing is because Imam Mahdi isn't here. If the Imam was here, if the wilayah of God was in the hands of the righteous, then this world will be a paradise on earth. The problem is the authority not being in the hands of the righteous. And actually, a hadith have a hadith about this, where they say that actually we, Ahlul Bayt, are the root of all goodness, and that other good deeds are the branches. The root of all goodness is the Ahlul Bayt, is the wilaya of the Imam of the time. And all of the other good deeds, they say that these are the branches, these are good things, but the root is that wilaya of Ahlul Bayt. And they say the opposite's also true. The problem of all of the world, or the problems in the world, is our enemies. the wilayah of God not being in the hands of Ahlul Bayt, and sins, those are much less. They're terrible in and of themselves, but they're not as important as the idea that power is not in the hands of Ahlul Bayt. So in that way, if you look at it, Trump or Clinton or Sanders, if he makes it, right? None of these things are important. The real big picture solution is to bring back the return of the Imam, inshallah. Now, there's something that we learn from the Ahlul Bayt. What the Ahlul Bayt teach us is that we're supposed to have a singular focus in our lives. If you look at the lives of the Ahlul Bayt, 250 years, you'll see that the Ahlul Bayt, under different circumstances, were taking all sorts of actions, stances, positions. This time they would be, let's say in the time of Imam Ridha, accepting to be the crown prince under pressure from Ma'mun and using that to promote the cause. In the time of Imam al-Hasan, signing a peace treaty with Muawiyah, for instance. In the time of Imam Hussein, no, rising and fighting. In the time of Imam Ali, no, the situation, time, problem. Always you see these different stances. But one thing that the Ahlul Bayt had was a singular focus. If you look at all of their activities, they're all reflecting one thing. All of the Ahlul Bayt, from the beginning till the end, were all trying to do what the Imam of the time will do. They were all trying the same thing that we as believers, we should be doing. They were all trying to do that. The hadith is like this. It says, it's hadith Qudsi, where God is speaking to the Prophet. He says, Ya Ahmad, O Ahmad, ij'al hammaka hamman wahida. Only have one focus. Try and do one thing. And that one thing is the thing that the Imam was trying to do. To put power into the hands of the righteous. To establish the kingdom of God on the earth. So we don't want to lose focus on these smaller things. We're focusing on that as believers now. Now what happens is, in order for mankind to experience God's greatest gift, something has to happen. This is actually very different from the Islam that's being presented by ISIS at the behest of Israel and her allies. Islam is not a religion that is imposed. When you want to see the kingdom of God on the face of the earth, when mankind wants to experience God's greatest blessing, mankind actually has to want this. It's not imposed. The opposite of what the enemies of Islam would have us think. As it says in the Holy Quran, it says, "Inna Allah la yughayyiru ma biqawmin hatta yughayyiru ma bianfusihim." God will never change the condition and the situation of a people until they change themselves. What has to happen in order for the Imam to return? Mankind at large needs to know Islam. I'll borrow a little bit from football terminology. You see, right now, Muslims are under pressure. Right now, there is Islamophobia. Right now, there's pressure. You guys might not be feeling it here in Dearborn, but in other places, believe me, as a Muslim, you feel pressure. I've talked to other believers after these different attacks, the San Bernardino attacks. They were like, my wife wears the hijab. My daughters wear the hijab. I'm worried about them going out and coming back and nobody bothering them to that extent. We're not really feeling it over here. But what has to happen? In football, they say this sometimes. That sometimes the best defense is a good offense. Right? As opposed to us thinking that that we should run away and hide, what needs to happen in order for the Imam to return is that the masses in the world need to be exposed to Islam. That's one of the messages that we get from the letter of the year based on the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt. Before the Imam comes, as I said before, that Islam will not be imposed. The people have to want Islam. In order for them to want Islam, they'd have to know Islam. If they don't know what Islam is, that's the whole reason for the terror and fear and worry, is that what is this Islam? I mean, is it what I see, the pictures, is that what you're trying to bring to me? Sharia law in that sense? Right? So what has to happen before the Imam returns is actually that people in the world get to know Islam. So, that being the case, the negative publicity is actually a blessing in disguise. We needed to have an honest discussion about Islam, meaning the people in the world need to have this honest discussion about Islam before the Imam returns. The enemies, they said, well, we'll keep people from knowing Islam by vilifying it, by terrifying people about Islam, but actually that's a wonderful opportunity. Now people are curious. Now we'll have that captive audience. So we want to make sure we take advantage of that. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, inviting to Islam, calling other people to Islam, I want to get a little help from you guys. It might not be something that you and I have heard a lot from the minbar. The idea of going out and inviting people to Islam before this, it may not have been something that we're hearing a lot from the minbar. Some people may almost feel it's a kind of Sunni thing to do, that Sunnis are the ones who go out and invite people, for instance. But this may not have been the case that we've been hearing from the minbar. We may have heard about the idea of interfaith discussions, but the idea that each one of us, especially youth, should feel a responsibility to talk to those people, their circle of friends, and make sure they know what Islam is, and invite in this way to God. It might not have been something that we had heard before. So let me just mention one of the verses of the Holy Quran. This is from Surah Yusuf, actually, verse number 108, where God says, قُلْ هَذِهِ سَبِيلِي. God telling the Prophet, say, this is my way. This is my path. This is my sabil. أَدْعُوا إِلَى اللَّهِ. The Prophet saying, Allah telling him, I call to God, I invite to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, ala basira. He says that with insight, I invite people to come to God. Ana wa man ittaba'ani. So I do this, and all those who follow me are supposed to be doing this. We're all supposed to be calling mankind to God. That's the way that Islam works, and the way we're supposed to do. Now, why the youth in particular? And alhamdulillah, we're blessed to be in an audience where there are a lot of youth. Even myself, I consider myself one of the youth. We're blessed to be. Why as youth is it so important? Because we believe that actually the future lies in the hands of the youth. The situation will not always be as it is. In a very short period of time, a lot of things can change, and the people who be the decision makers and those who are game changers are these same youth that are out here. So we definitely want to take care advantage of this and make sure that we speak to them. Now, one thing that comes to mind is that sometimes when there's so much pressure, when people are saying bad things about Islam, a feeling can come into the heart of some of the believers, what we call the bunker mentality. Everybody is against me. Nobody wants to hear. Everybody hates Islam, right? Some believers are a little bit pessimistic when it comes to inviting other people to Islam. They think there's actually believers who are afraid for non-Muslims to know what's in the Quran. If they know what we really say, my God. A little pessimistic. I'm hearing a story once. They said that there was an optimist and a pessimist, and they were both friends. And no matter what happened, the pessimist would always be pessimistic. The optimist would be trying, working on the guy, trying to get him to think positively, and he would never think positively. So what he did was he said, I've got a solution. I'm going to take him on a trip with me, and we're going to go fishing. They went out, they went fishing. He had a dog with him. He went and he shot down. So they went out onto a lake. While they were out there, he had a gun with him, and he shot down a bird. And then he told his dog to go over and fetch the bird. His dog was so amazing, the optimist. His dog could walk on water, and it went and started walking on water. It picked up the bird right off, floating off the lake, and it came back to him. The pessimist looked at him. He said, that dog can't swim, can it? So some people were like, no matter what the situation, but the believers actually, no, we should be positive. We shouldn't be worried at all that this situation will turn out in our best interest. Now, one of our most important jobs at this time, brothers and sisters, is to believe and think good of the promises of God. One of them is to believe those promises in our personal lives. When we look at the global situation, those promises of God and how God is going to help us and look out for us. And also those promises, meaning the idea that this religion, you know from the verses of the Quran, the religion of Islam is a religion of the fitrah. It's just a matter of us going over and explaining. But we shouldn't feel that, no, nobody wants to hear and everybody's afraid. So to believe in those promises, to accept those promises, I want to give you an example of how this works. This story is from the time of Musa. So there is a verse of the Holy Quran which is known as the poets. And over there, God starts to explain a situation. Verses number 61 to 63, a story. What happens is that Musa alayhi salam was given صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. محمد وعجل فرجه. Can I continue? Should I continue? Okay. So back to the story. What happened was that Musa, after approaching the Tawhut of the time, was given instructions to flee. He and the believers at that time, their salvation was in running away from Fir'aun. They got the instructions to flee. And imagine how that must have been, the idea of running away from somebody. Fir'aun, as you know in the Holy Quran, is referred to as the impaler. You know what he did to his wife, right? When his wife disobeyed and wouldn't follow him. So somebody who is a psychopath like that, I'd kill my own wife, I'm the impaler. That kind of a person, your instructions with a large group of believers is to run away. Word got back to Fir'aun that the believers have, the slaves are running away. And the slave master decided to pursue them. So where are the believers running towards? The sea. Who's chasing them? Fir'aun. The verses of Quran say, in the morning, the two groups saw one another. So the believers are running. And they're being pursued, Fir'aun trying to hunt them down. Some of the believers at this situation, they saw how desperate things were from the outside. Some of the believers panicked and they said to Musa that definitely we're going to be overtaken. There is no way we're going to make it. The sea in front of us, Fir'aun to the back of us, women and children running towards the sea, we're not going to make it. And Musa said these words. He says, "Kalla, never. Inna ma'ya Rabbi sayahdeen. My Lord is with me, He will guide me. He gave me the instructions. Even if right now we're running towards the sea, there is no way to escape, I'm going to be able to make it. My Lord is with me." He kept running. What happened next is interesting. So Musa, instead of being intimidated by what was happening, believed the promises of God, kept running. Then what happened? The verse says this, فَأَوْحَيْنَا إِلَى مُوسَى. At this stage, we revealed to Musa, أَنَضْرِبْ بَعَصَاكَ الْبَحْرِ. We told him to split the sea, to hit the sea with your asa, with your stick, and then the sea parted. So, the lesson that we can learn for us, if we can stay true to those promises of God, if we can expect victory, and I'm going to mention what it will take for in order for us to get that victory, if we can stay true, we can expect that God will show us the way. God will give us that solution, inshallah. Now, the other thing that we have to keep in mind, brothers and sisters, is that the decree of God is always good. That we serve a very good God, and when a situation that we're put in is something that's outside of our control, even if it's difficult, even if it's hard to handle, that situation in the grand scheme of things is always good. It doesn't mean that we don't try and change the situation, but sometimes we need to be in a certain situation in life for certain reasons. There are lessons we can learn from that situation. So we have in our ahadith, they say that the decree of God, those specific words, the decree of God is always good, or as this one hadith that I wanted to quote for you, that this was in the time of the sixth imam. He was very ill apparently. And one of the believers comes in and he sees the imam in this weakened state. Right? So imagine for you, if you got a chance to visit the imam of the time, and now you go to see the imam of the time, and you see the imam is deathly ill. How would you feel? Normally, so this believer apparently starts crying when he sees the imam in this bad situation, and then the imam explains the rule to him. He says the decree of God is always in the favor of the believer. He says if the believer owns the east and the west, that's what's good. Or he says if the believer's arms and legs are, their limbs are severed, that's what's good, right? I serve a good God. God's looking out for me. God's going to help me in this situation. So now, oh, I said that the situation is always good and it's always in our interest. Even the situation of Islamophobia, even the pressures, even those people who can't find work right now, for instance, because of being pressured, right? Or those people who are taunted or whatever. Again, it doesn't mean we don't do our responsibility, but the idea of this being good, God leading us somewhere. I want to share a true story with you. This is from the one of the battlefields. You know that Islam is facing a lot of battlefields, and there are many situations where you have believers and they're actually fighting to defend Islam, true Islam, and keep off the advance of kufr. Whether it's in the form of ISIS now or Israel or anybody else, this is one of those stories about this. These guys say that we are on a particular island. Now, what we had to do was we had to drain the island of water. In order for us to maintain our presence on this particular island, we had to drain the island of water. He said, when we drained the island of water, all of the creatures that were on that island came out. Snakes, rats, all of these things came out. But what was our duty? We're over there, we're fighting, we're protecting, and we're in this situation. He says that one of the things that was strange about this island was these large rats. He said, so what happened was that I could fit myself under the blanket. It was me and my roommate. We're both over there. We're maintaining the certain petition. He said, but at night, when I was my turn to rest, he said, I would cover myself up with my blankets. And the rats, if they were going to do anything, they would walk on top of me. Sometimes jihad fi sabilillah is not easy. If the rats were going to do anything, the rats would walk on top of the blanket. I'd be covered in the blanket. I could make it. It was okay. He said, my friend was a little taller than I was, though. Right? Sometimes being tall is not such a blessing. My friend was like that guy, he was about my height. This guy's a little bit bigger guy. Allah makes us come in different shapes and sizes. My friend was taller. So my friend would try and do the same thing that I'd do. He'd wrap himself up in the blanket, but his feet would be out of the blanket. And the rats would come over and they would have a feast. They would come and they would bite my friend's feet. He said the situation was so terrible. After a while, my friend lost a toenail. Right? They were, rats, and they were on an island. So the rats were harassed. He said the guy would get so angry, sometimes he would wake up in the middle of the night because he was exhausted, doing jihad fi sabilillah, come back at night, sleeping in the night, and then the rats bothering. He said sometimes the guy would get so angry, he would take his machine gun and he would start spraying, riddling the room with bullets. He would get so furious. And he said, I would be telling the guy, look, you calm down, you're going to kill me. You're trying to kill the rats, you're going to kill me. He said, we went and we complained to our commander. Apparently the commander later became Shaheed. He said, we complained to the commander. We told him this is the situation. He said, I've got a solution for you. Don't worry, I'm going to go back. I'll get the solution for you. And he came back with a cat. And he told the brothers, he said, see, cats are the enemies of rats. They said, what are we supposed to do with the cat? He said, nothing. Just pet the cat. Keep the cat comfortable. The cat will hunt down the rats. You guys will be okay. Alhamdulillah. So we came, get the cat a little food or whatever. We're resting, and then everything's going well, he said. And then after that, one of the rats stuck its head out of the wall. The cat saw him. The cat took off running after the rat. And we were all excited, like, alhamdulillah, watching this rat go over there. He's going to tear the cat. The cat is going to tear the rat up. And he went after the rat. He said, after that, the rat gave a shriek. He somehow communicated to the other wild rats that the cat is here. Four or five rats came out. And those wild rats, and they started fighting the cat. The cat turned around, the cat started running. And so he said, my friend and I, we got up, we're running, and the cat's fighting and trying to escape, five rats. So we're laughing our heads off. We come running out of the bunker. He said, when we ran out of the bunker, just as we ran out, a missile landed. He says, my friend made it out of the bunker. What happened was the bunker collapsed on me, but it collapsed. The guy's telling the story. He still lived. He said, the bunker collapsed on me, but let's say my legs were inside. So what happened? God wanted us to live. Because he wanted us to live, it wasn't time for that missile to take our lives. He created that situation and got us a cat and made the cat fight with the rats. And we thought it was funny. We got up and we left. And that kept us alive.
So,
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. My point is this, for us as believers not to get worried about this situation. God's in control. It's all okay. Now, our strategy. One of the things we have to discuss though is our strategy. In order for our strategy to work, brothers and sisters, we have to feel that we belong here. We have to feel that we belong here, and I'll explain what I mean. We said the solution for mankind is that God's representative rule the earth. In order for that to happen, you and I have to introduce Islam as is to the people in the world. In order for us to introduce Islam as is, then we're going to have to talk to the people, but people who are confident can talk. People who are apologists, they're not able to go over and present Islam as is. Their whole effort is to make Islam fit in. There was these, a couple, they had a situation where they were on a campus. And apparently they set up a little tabling event and they want to go over and talk to people about Islam and stuff like that. And they said what happened was that a gay couple came over to the table. Right? And so people wanted to go over and they wanted to have good akhlaq, so they start talking to the gay couple about relationship issues. The Muslims, right? You're absolutely opposed to this. What is your question? Is it allowed in Islam? Absolutely not. Right? True Islam, if you're going to present Islam as is, but who can do something like that? Somebody who feels strong about what they believe. A weak Muslim, an apologist Muslim, somebody who's trying to fit in, they try and find ways of saying, we're like you. That's not going to bring the imam back. People are curious and they need to know what makes us different. So the thing that we need to do is to feel actually strong about what we believe. Now, I'll give you an example. Right now, we're saying that this is an election year. Right? It's an election year. And a lot of people are really worried about Trump. There are Muslims who are worried about Trump. They're thinking that we got to go out there and we got to vote, and we'll definitely be voting Democratic. Otherwise, if Trump comes in, he's going to get bullets and dip them in pig's blood, and he's going to shoot us. Right? Or he'll build that wall, or he'll do this. It's like wajib for you to get out and vote. Right? Whereas if you look at the fatwa of your marja, you might see something very different. And then there's a reason. Why aren't they clear about their views? Why do they word it in that way? That's one discussion. But what I'm talking about is the idea of using every opportunity to present true Islam. A Muslim who believes and who feels that they belong, how would they take advantage of an election year in order to bring the imam back? One of the things that you and I could do is to explain to the local American population how the American electoral process works. How does the process here in America work? Is it a direct vote or not? What is what we call a swing state? What is a red state? What is a blue state? What happens if one person wins the majority in one particular state? What is the Electoral College? What's a super candidate? What is Super Tuesday? Is there any direct vote in America? Is it possible for me to change who comes in? Are the superdelegates, are they even people that we've elected necessarily? In the Electoral College, constitutionally, do they even have to vote the way you and I did? When you even enter into the presidential race, you're one of the two candidates, right? So how is this system fixed? So why would anybody who has any kind of common sense vote? If they know American politics. If they don't, they're naive, that's something different. I remember hearing a story once. They said that once there was this blonde lady and she was speeding and she got pulled over by the cops. And the cop was a blonde lady. And the cop said, I need to see your license. She said, okay, what does a license look like? He said, your license, rectangular. It'll have your picture in it. Look for it. So she started searching through her purse. Finally, she pulled out a mirror. It's got my picture on it. She handed it to the cop. And then the cop looked at it and said, oh, you can go. She said, I can go, but I was speeding. She said, I didn't realize you were a cop. Right? So that kind of confused Muslim, no. Right? But somebody who's just an American who belongs here, not, I'm terrified. Something. Oh, it's time for salah. Okay. Inshallah, we will come to a very quick, and we don't want to delay the prayers at all. So, well, we're to come to a conclusion. Our conclusion is that we've got to present Islam as is, which means we need to learn Islam. Then we've got to feel that we belong in order to be able to present Islam as is without apologizing. We ask that Allah accept what was said and heard and His way. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Thank you, Samahat Sheikh. Sheikh Osama will also be delivering a two-day seminar tomorrow and Sunday at the Zainabiyya Center in Walled Lake at 11:30 a.m. until Salat al-Duhr. If you could all help stack the chair so we don't delay prayer, we would really appreciate it. Inshallah, we'll see you all next week. Wassalamu alaikum.